Just for a minute, I got another speaker. Just a, sorry about that. Okay, let's call the meeting to order. It is 10:17. With us today, Representative Tuck, myself, Representative Heron, Representative Wilson, Representative Munoz, and Representative Thompson. We have a couple of presentations today, but before that, a little bit of housekeeping is that on Thursday, for staff's information, we'll have House Bill 119 up. That's the governor's bill on ADA, and so that we will take testimony, and it's my intent not to hold it, is to hold it till the following week to make sure that we have a good dialogue and a good debate in committee before we pass it on to the next committee referral. As last week, last meeting, we started a tradition, I hope as it will do every time, is a surprise speaker that will share a missed economic opportunity that Alaska has experienced or one that we may miss. So last week, the majority leader, Alan Oshman, told us the Boeing story. And the Boeing story was that Boeing put out an RFP to build a plant in British Columbia or Alaska, and the state of Alaska did not respond to that RFP. So a missed opportunity there. The surprise speaker that we had today, that legislator is ill, and so it will be postponed to the next meeting. But last week, Representative Tuck was in Sundance pursuing economic development opportunities in tourism and trade, but he has a missed opportunity story. So, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And most importantly, my missed opportunity was to be able to speak on my vision on the state of Alaska. And I think it's appropriate for this committee to talk about missed opportunities, because when you have a lack of vision, you know, you miss opportunities. And if you want to motivate people, I think by expressing those missed opportunities that come our way will hopefully motivate us to prepare for a vision, to give the state of Alaska direction and know where we're going. And so I'm not saying that my vision is a vision for the state of Alaska, but I would like to share my vision and what I'd like to see happening. One of the most important things I think that we can do, because everybody knows that Alaska is an extraction state and that we continue to remain somewhat of a colony. So my vision is to turn Alaska into a smart state, one that has a smart economy, smart development, smart education, and one that we can have smart infrastructure and start beginning to produce a physical economy, creating physical wealth for the state of Alaska. When you look at that, what are the areas that we want to invest in? First one is agriculture. And throughout history, you know, your nation always invested in agriculture because you never want to rely on another country for your food supply. And I was really pleased to see the presentations that we had last week, because there's like a renewed interest in agriculture, especially here in the state of Alaska. And what happened in the past throughout United States history is what we used to call surpluses and reserves. All of a sudden, we dumped onto the farmers and dumped them onto the markets and hurt the farmers and called them basically surpluses rather than reserves. And we pretty much wiped out some of the farming communities that we have in America. And then, of course, investment in infrastructure. And I would have to say that one of the things that made America into a world superpower was our investment in the railroads. Abraham Lincoln built 5 transcontinental railroads, but his advisors begged him only build 2, and at the same time subsidized grain and hoofed animals over to Europe and fought the Civil War and never really had to tax the citizens of America. And it was producing that physical wealth that created the veins and the vessels of our economic system. And so I've always really shared Wally Hickel's idea, former Governor Wally Hickel, on building the railroad over to Russia. And that's actually, I was watching a program while I was in Utah at the Sundance in my hotel room on Building Alaska. And there's a website you can go to, buildingalaska.com, but it was a PBS special that talked about what it took to build Alaska and the railroads, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, our Constitution, building a physical economy, why our state constitutional writers wanted to make sure that we were an owner state, and where that took us and where we're at today. But it's really interesting that even back then they talked about building a railroad in the late 1800s all the way over to Russia coming through Alaska. And just like it was the veins and vessels and helped build America, I think internationally, and we talk about economic development, trade, and tourism, just the international trade that we can establish with railroads. And as we know, worldwide, the cheapest mode of transportation is still water, and then second is railroad. And, of course, the fastest mode of transportation, which happens to be the most expensive, is air. So my vision for the state of Alaska is to turn Point McKenzie into the future industrial park. That way it's close to the population, but not necessarily in our backyards. And we have plenty of room to expand, but we need to plan that, because then we have the cheapest mode of transportation, which is water. And when I was on the Airport Planning Commission, one of the things that we were looking at was we have no more room to expand for the Anchorage International Airport. And depending on what year you look at, our international airport is either fourth or fifth worldwide for air freight. And there's some reasons for that. You know, we have former Senator Ted Stevens made it to, wasn't a first port of entry, so we're able to exchange goods from one plane to another plane without it being a stop that needed a bunch of inspections and so on and so forth. So we got around some of the Jones Act stuff with that. So and plus we have a lot of shipments coming over from Asia to where they are able to put on more payload and use less fuel, so it requires them to fuel here in Anchorage before going on elsewhere, or Fairbanks, depending on which route they end up taking. So we'll have the best of both worlds. We'll have the cheapest mode of transportation, which is water. We just built a rail spur going to the port, which would give us the second mode of cheapest transportation and bringing stuff out to extract, and then also would bring our fastest mode of transportation, which is air freight. So, and that's what we were looking at. The Airport Planning Commission was moving the airport over to Point McKenzie. We happen to have the land. We just have no more room to expand in Anchorage. So with that, one other thing that I think is really important is to do what the state of Texas did and what the state of California did. And they didn't only invest in science and technology through the university system, but they also went one step further with materials development and prototype institutes. That way, when the students learned the science and technologies, they came up with the process methods and the machine tool technologies that they were able to apply entrepreneurially right there for their state. Petrochemical industry in the state of Texas, a good example, and of course, Silicon Valley there in California. And I was looking at an old article, and it was written in like 75 or 76, and it talked about the value of oil in Alaska compared to the value of oil in Texas. And at that time, it was like $7 or $8 a barrel was the value of oil for Alaska. But in Texas, it was over $50 a barrel. And the reason why was because of all the value-added industries that they were able to attach to that and do other things with, producing a physical economy, putting more people to work, and in higher jobs. So that's, in a nutshell, what I'd like to see happen with this committee is to provide a vision so we don't have any more future missed opportunities, and to be able to come together and really be the catalyst and provide the leadership that I think would help pull the rest of the lower 48 out of its economic slump. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tuck, for that nutshell briefing. At this time, we're going to have the balance of the meeting, we're going to have two presentations from ASME and from ATIA. Ray, if you could please join us at the table. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and begin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ray Ryuta. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, and I'm pleased to be here before you and the committee to talk about what ASME does for economic development. If I may, I'd like to just introduce staff members that are in the room. Nares Sresta, my finance officer, Tyson Fick, our communications director. We also have Joe Jacobson, our international program director, and the chairman of our international marketing committee, Jeff Stevens from Kodiak, who's a volunteer member of our international marketing committee and chair.
Thank you, Ray, and welcome to everyone. Joining us at the meeting is Vice Chair Representative Olson. Good morning. Please, sir.
ASME has a very broad reach internationally and domestically, trying to market Alaska seafood around the world. This collage of a number of our point of sales materials just gives you kind of a quick picture of some of the things that we do on a global basis. As a reminder, ASME is a state corporation. We're a public-private partnership, and we're guided by a board of directors appointed by the governor. One of the things we like to say is that we're the brand manager for all Alaska seafood. And it's important to note that in our charter, in state law, we are prohibited from marketing by individual brand, prohibited from marketing by individual region, or marketing anything that doesn't come from the state of Alaska. We market Alaska products and Alaska. That's part of our charter. It's something we take very seriously and we guard very carefully. This is our mission statement as developed by our board of directors several years ago. The important part of this is that we've highlighted in black there. Our job is to do what we can to increase the economic value of Alaska seafood resource.
Just for the record, please note that the triathlete, Representative Foster, has quietly come to our meeting. Sorry for that oversight.
No problem, sir. These are the members of our board of directors. As you can see, we have four large processors, one small processor, two fishermen, and four ex officio members. There's three listed there right now. Cora Campbell, when she was fisheries advisor to the governor, was our representative from the governor's office. I'm sure he will appoint somebody fairly soon to take her place, but that name hasn't been put forward to us at least yet. But these folks are the people that I report to and my staff report to, and they're the ones that guide ASME.
Right. In the past, wasn't it much larger? Was the ASME board
that, that's larger? Correct, Mr. Chairman. Prior to the Joint Legislative Industry Salmon Task Force, ASME had a board of 25. As a result of that task force, the board was reduced to 7 and 4 ex officio members. And that's been a much easier board to work with in terms of just synergy. 25 is a lot of people to try to get to a consensus. So I think it was a very good move, reducing the size of the board.
So obviously this board is an attractive one to be on to help shape the goals. So when would there be changeover? Or when would somebody drop off and we get someone new?
The board members' terms are three-year terms. The governor appoints new members when their terms expire. We've had several turnovers on the board. There's at least three members that were on the board before that are no longer here and have been replaced by new members. So that turnover almost occurs every year, either the person gets reappointed or someone else is appointed by the governor to take their place.
Thank you.
We're advised by a number of committees. We have four specie committees, which represent the broad spectrum of the fishing industry in the state. And then we have what we call our operational committees. And these are the folks that actually oversee the budgets for the various marketing departments. And the last thing we have, which just came into being last year, is our customer advisory panel. And this is something that we're pretty proud of. This is something where we bring in members of our customers, or a broad section of them, to advise us on how we can do our job better. And these are made up of some of the largest retailers, food service distributors, broadline distributors, and frozen food producers in not just the U.S. but in the world. We have four representatives from the U.S. and four representatives from overseas, Europe and Asia. And this panel will meet again with our board in Cordova at our board meeting in the middle of May, I believe it is, 25th, 26th of May. And these people come in once a year to sit down and review our programs, review our plans, and provide advice. As one of our customer advisory panel members said, it's the first time he's ever sat down with a marketing group that actually had the entire supply chain at the table, from the fishermen to the end seller and all the people in between, sitting in one place talking about how we can move Alaska seafood forward and do a better job of marketing our products.
So, Ray, of course, you've been in the business a long time. And so when you had these advisory meetings, did something surprise you? It was a comment that, God, we never thought of that.
Not at the first meeting. The only thing that was surprising was unanimous support for ASME going out and doing a independent third-party certification of our fisheries, something we suspected we need, but we needed to have our customers come in and tell us that that's what they really wanted. And that meeting was held last March here in Juneau. Our board and the advisory panel sat down, and we went through the activity that we're actually engaged in now with a group called Global Trust to independently certify all of Alaska's fisheries. As you know, we've had a certification for various fisheries by the Marine Stewardship Council for a number of years. When we sat down with our advisory panel, they said we'd like an alternative because we don't need that in every market. It doesn't preclude using that. It just provides an alternative that everybody in Alaska can use and all of our customers have available. I think if anything was surprising, it was the unanimous consent or agreement that everybody agreed that we should pursue this. So we are.
Thank you.
This is just a quick outline of our organization that shows how our committees report to the board and how our programs report to me as executive director. International program and domestic programs are divided up. The international program is run out of Juneau, and the domestic program is run out of our office in Seattle. This is the budget that we have before the legislature this year. There are three components to it. There's a voluntary industry assessment. That's actually down a little bit from what we normally provide because it's based on 2009 fishing year numbers. Those were, as we all know, the economy was fairly tough. And the pollock tack was down, so our take was a little bit lower from the industry than we normally have. Normally, that's between an $8 and a $10 million range. State general funds is a match fairly close to one-to-one, and we're greatly appreciative for the governor for having that in the budget in that way. And then we also get money from the Federal Market Access Program, which is run by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and we use that money for overseas marketing. That money requires a match. We are a cooperator, as it is called, and we have to compete for that money with folks like the Beef Council and the Pork Council and the Dairy Council and those types of folks. So our match is very important. We use state general funds to match a part of that, as well as industry in-kind contributions, so that we have a good, strong match going in to get that money. In terms of real money, we get basically $2 from the MAP program for every dollar of state investment that we put in there. So it gives us a very nice overseas marketing budget, largely driven by the MAP program. As a cooperator, we're required to respond to FAS, who's the overseer of the Foreign Agriculture Service. So our programs are tightly controlled. We don't have a whole lot of leeway once we enter into a contract with them for this about changing mid-year. But it's a good program. We're concerned that it's under attack in some of the budget cuts going on in Washington, and we hope that program stays. It's built as part of the Farm Bill.
So last year, the Lieutenant Governor Campbell went to Brussels. Do you know if he said anything to the governor? And, I mean, did he tell him that we better stay competitive?
I wasn't privy to his conversations. He said he was going to do that. I assume he did. Certainly, he expressed an interest that we'd sure love to see the governor visit, as we've had some legislatures visit in the past, the Brussels Seafood Show, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. I'm going to get a little farther in my presentation, if I may.
There's been an official invite to the Gov to go to Brussels?
There has been.
Thank you.
This just is a slide that shows how much our industry provides in taxes to state and local government through fees, licenses, and self-assessments. It's just a broad number. The tables are broken down there. You can see the colors. Local is the local government. A number of the monies that come in are turned back to the local governments for use. I believe that's in the 30-some million dollar range. Some of those are self-assessments that are provided for us and others to do their business, and others just go straight into the state treasury. You talk about economic development. I think a lot of the things that we do in developing new markets, increasing the value of existing markets, and trying to increase the value directly lead to economic development. And one One quick story I'll tell you. It involves Bristol Bay. As we've seen the price of fish increase, particularly salmon, over the last few years, this past year, according to Lainey Welch, I'll just read this. She said, a surprise pink salmon fishery in Bristol Bay, the Nishigek, attracted 60 boats and 35 set netters who pulled in over 1 million humpies along with 60,000 cohos. It's been so long since a pink and coho salmon fishery occurred, managers had no numbers to even compare the catch to. The point here is that as we increase the value, it gives opportunities for fisheries that haven't been economical before because there wasn't the demand for the fish. And it extends some of the shoulder seasons. This case, Bristol Bay, they would have probably shut down the plants by this time before that particular fishery was pursued. But because there was such a shortage of pinks and chums in the market and such a demand for them at a good price, they were able to keep these markets open, or these fisheries open. I'm sure there are others around the state. I just wanted to give that as one example. But that's what economic impact of increasing prices for our products make. It makes it more economical for people to go out there and do the job. Another thing that we do is education to help increase the price of our products. Education goes from the source, from the time the fish comes over the side until it's put on the center of the plate by the waiter in your restaurant, or served or delivered over the fish counter by the fishmonger. We have an extensive education program that we've developed. And in addition, we've even reached out to air cargo operators to provide handling for them on how best to take care of the product. So we reach a long way with a number of our programs beyond just pure marketing of seafood, and that's right in our directive in our law. The other thing we're doing to economic development, foreign economic development, is the International Food Aid Program. We've been invested in this for a number of years, working in partnership with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. We first started out to bring canned salmon into the International Food Aid Program, and that's been pretty darn successful. We've seen a good movement in there, and now we're working on some projects trying to develop some markets for herring. As we know, there are some parts, particularly in western Alaska, that some of the herring doesn't get harvested because it's not economically viable right now. We're hoping that through the food aid program and the pilot project we've got going on with herring, that we'll see that change in a couple of years, and that project is currently underway.
Just for the record, Representative Gardner joined us about 5 minutes ago. Good morning. This is a question, Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the topic of economic development, can you just give me a brief summary of what kind of efforts are being made in western Alaska, especially with the devastated lower Yukon that we saw some time ago in the disaster declaration that was made? But what kind of efforts have ASB made in terms of the fishing industry and marketing the fish in those areas?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, because we're restricted to marketing the state in general, we don't really have, ASME doesn't really have economic development programs that we run. However, we do use as much as we can emphasis on regions and tell people where our fish come from, fish with a story sell. So we work very closely with some of the producers in the lower Yukon, like Quick Pack Fisheries, for example, and some of the folks in the upper Yukon to help them and provide them with materials and marketing opportunities and trade leads and things like that that will help them develop those fisheries a little further.
And I see you do have a board member from QuickPack on,
yes,
on with ASME there. So
yes, we do.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
As you can see from this slide, this is a very large industry for the state. I think that the key here is that you know, seafood is a renewable resource. It's the resource that keeps on giving if it's properly managed and taken care of, something that we in Alaska do a particularly good job of. And it has infinite value to the state. And, you know, you can continue to harvest fish in Alaska for as long as we manage the fisheries correctly. So we have a great resource. We're very proud to be able to take that resource to market and it's something that is we should never lose sight of. It's a valuable resource that has value way beyond just this year or the next year. I like to show this more to folks in the lower 48 and out of other places because sometimes they and we forget just how big we really are, not only in terms of geographic size, but if we were a country, we would be in the top 10 producing seafood countries in the nation. We produce 50 to 60% of the national seafood production, and yet, on a global scale, we only produce about 2% of the total seafood production worldwide, which means we're not a price setter in the commodity market, which is why we have to market to separate ourselves from the rest of the commodity pack. And I think we've done a fairly good job of that over the years. This just explains very quickly the number of employees in the processing and seafood processing sector that work in Alaska. Another spinoff that a lot of people don't sometimes recognize is the value of the backhaul for seafood going out of Alaska in both frozen and canned form. This is just a chart from Tote, but others will tell you the same thing. I've heard Lyndon say similar things, that the price of all of our goods in Alaska would be about 10 cents a pound higher were it not for the seafood that gets hauled out of the state into the markets in the lower 48. So there's a benefit. I don't know how you can put a dollar sign on it, but there is an intangible benefit here that a lot of people don't sometimes recognize. That backhaul is very important. It also has a big impact on small communities, not just the backhaul bringing the freight rates down, but in many of our coastal communities, seafood is really the only industry. And the plants bring down the cost of utilities because they pay a lot of the overhead. A lot of the barges that come in probably wouldn't come in if it wasn't for the seafood industry. They bring the goods and services that that the communities need. And the infrastructure that the plants in many of these rural communities provide, particularly the non-road communities, are critical in terms of being able to afford energy as it is out there and provide jobs, provide input into the communities for work and for additional money.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Can we back up just one second? Couple slides. Alaska seafood industry employs over 50,000 people.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you do you know in each category, commercial fishing and seafood processing, what percentage of them are Alaskans?
Actually, I have some rough numbers. It's about 50% in both. There's latest information we have is there's 6,877 crew, 10,000 in the processing industry. And I'm sorry, 6,877 permit holders, 10,000 crew members, and 6,956 in the processing sector for about 23,861. So about 50% of that total are residents.
Thank you.
And we can provide those numbers exact for the committee if you didn't get those down.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay. This slide shows the value of what's happened to our salmon industry, and I can't help but reflect back on to Representative Tuck's comment about, and yours, Mr. Chairman, about opportunities missed. This is an example of an opportunity taken. Back in 2002, when the salmon industry was virtually on its knees, we had companies literally walking away from the salmon industry. People were turning in their permits. And people were pretty depressed about where the thing was going. The legislature, in its wisdom, got together with the industry members on the Joint Legislative Industry Salmon Task Force and took a hard look at the salmon industry and what was going on. A number of things came out of that. New incentives for the industry to change product form, to reinvest in the plants. A complete change in ASME and our board structure and our go-to-market strategies. And you can see the results on this particular chart here about what's happened to salmon. The blue line is the ex-vessel value. That's the price that the fishermen get at the dock. And the A black line is the harvest value. And even though the harvest value fluctuates through natural cycles, you can see that the ex-vessel value is holding. And I believe the numbers, when we finally see the final ones for 2010, are going to be up in the $500 million range for salmon. So this was something, and this is all because we've managed to change the salmon fishery into a modern fishery that provides new value-added products. And I believe this was, this is directly creditable back, traceable back to the activities that were taken as a result of the Joint Legislative Industry Salmon Task Force. This is just one example of what happened with that particular evolution. This is for pink salmon. The top line shows you where the cans were being produced, 70-80% back in the early 2000s. Frozen fillets were fairly small, and the value of the pack was pretty low. Once the incentives and some of the changes started to kick in as a result of the Salmon Task Force activities, you can see where these lines started to converge. And a couple of interesting things happened. Values went up because we started producing more frozen fillets. And you can see around 2008, all of a sudden, the value of cans started to go up. And the reason that happened was that a lot of the surplus cans were taken off the market and they were turned into value-added fillets. So this has had a very positive impact. As you can see, we're still looking at some pretty high numbers for pinks in 2010, up from around a dime to 35 cents, and that's our biggest fishery. That's a huge fishery, and that's quite a change for just those fishermen alone. There are other examples like this, but I thought I'd give you this one just as a show you the impact of what economic incentive in developing new product forms for the industry brings to the table.
What is our best pink market?
It kind of varies. We have a lot of pink salmon that goes into the southern United States in southeastern United States in can form, but our fillets are starting to go in, and our salmon burgers are starting to go into Costco stores nationwide, salmon burgers, Costco stores nationwide. And if you go to Denny's or places like that and you get a nice little fillet, chances are, wild salmon fillet, chances are that's an Alaska pink. Hmm. And that's changed dramatically over the years. And one of the things, this is something that we did to help with that, is our Cook It Frozen campaign that started back in 2004 as a result of money that we got from the Alaska Fisheries Marketing Board. We didn't have many fillets in the early 2000s, but as the fillets started to come out, we had to change the perception of frozen fish because the Norwegian and Chilean farm salmon come in under the moniker of it's fresh. Ours is frozen. We went out and did a lot of work to try to change that perception, working with restaurants, working with chefs, working with universities, working with the Culinary Institute of America, both at Hyde Park and at Greystone, to show that frozen is good and sometimes better than so-called fresh that's been sitting maybe in traffic for a long time. That has changed dramatically, and you can see the separation we've managed to do from imported farm salmon. Now you can see the effect of the turndown in the restaurant trade there in 2008 and 2009 numbers. We're hoping to see that begin to rebound as people start going back to restaurants again. But 60% of our seafood in the U.S. at least is still consumed at the restaurant trade, and when that trade goes down, it's going to impact our prices. But the fact that we managed to still hold the separation, I think, speaks pretty highly about how we've managed to change perceptions on frozen seafood.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Tucker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doesn't Target have something also just recently that they've done? Didn't they just marketing, not marketing, but advertising that they're selling Alaska, is it Alaska fish?
Representative Tucker, through the chair, that's correct. Target has gone to totally wild Alaska seafood for their sales, so they don't sell any farm fish.
And Mr. Chair, follow up?
Please.
Is that only for Alaska, or is that for all their Target stores?
That's for all their Target stores.
Thank you.
So overall, I think we have a pretty good success story to tell. We've built a fairly strong brand. We're number two among.
Yes, Representative Gardner.
What's number one?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, number one is Angus beef.
Thank you.
Everybody else, Idaho potatoes and all those other guys have fallen by the wayside, but we're still going head-to-head with Angus beef for the number one spot. The good news is that the government just came out and endorsed the idea that we've been pushing for a long time, that you need to eat more seafood, and that seems to be a positive attitude around the country. So hopefully we'll be able to overtake that in some time. Mm-hmm. Perceptions are really important. As you can see, 76% of people at restaurants prefer wild, naturally caught versus farm products. 82% of the folks say that if they see Alaska on the menu, Alaska seafood logo on the menu, it will influence their likelihood to purchase seafood. But we're not without our challenges. The global recession, despite the rise in salmon prices, has hurt a lot of other prices. Cod has been impacted severely. Russian and salmon pollock are coming on in great numbers. They'll be fierce competitors in the years ahead. Norway, capitalizing on the fact that the Chileans had a serious problem with infectious salmon anemia, have been aggressively pursuing the U.S. market. Their pockets are much deeper than ours. They outspend us by, you know, a 3 or 4 to 1 margin. There's confusion over eco-labels, something that's been very frustrating, I think, for us, but it's something that we've just had to deal with. And then there's, as I mentioned earlier, there's pressure to reduce the market access program. There are other challenges, but these are some of the major ones that we face that we have to combat on a daily basis.
Ray, two questions in this section. Is had a briefing here last week. The Norwegians have some sort of tariff that they're trying to get Congress to eliminate. How would that could you please explain it to the committee, and how should Alaska approach it?
Mr. Chairman, I really don't know enough about that specific tariff. I have inquired, as you asked me to our delegation in D.C. I believe that original tariff was put on to protect American farmed salmon producers, but I'm waiting to get some feedback from our folks in Washington on whether it would be helpful for the state to take a position on that or not. And since I don't know the details of the law, I'd prefer not to try to speculate on whether that would be a good idea until I get something back from someone who actually knows the details here.
Okay, thank you. And for committee members, it may be an issue that we may want to jump into later in the session. The other part is what you've talked about is that you have your global trust label that ASME is embracing. Could you just briefly, because we want to get to our next presentation here shortly, is the danger of some of these eco labels? I mean, you would think that there's no danger in having an eco label, but could you share the part that you've been concerned with?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The positive and the negative real quickly. The positive is that eco labels have brought a lot of attention to the overfishing that occurs in other parts of the world, not in Alaska. The downside is if a single eco label becomes too powerful, they basically have control of the marketplace and determine who gets to go to market. That was one of the concerns that was expressed by our customer advisory panel, that we want some options because you don't need an eco label in some cases. All you really need is some sort of proof that you're buying from a sustainable fishery, a sustainably managed fishery. Our concern is that we have to always go through one label, no matter what the market. So that's the potential downside here and the biggest concern we have.
For the committee members, I think Ray's being a very positive politician here is that the danger of an eco label, the way I understand it, is if you don't pay this fee to this eco label organization, then they'll work against you. So there's adjectives that would describe that process, which I will not share today on the record, but appreciate your explaining it. Representative Gardner, you have a question?
Yes, quickly. The Norwegian salmon that they're marketing, is that farm salmon or wild?
That's all farm salmon.
Thank you.
Okay, Ray, we probably have just a few more minutes.
Okay. I think, let me just cover quickly the trends then. I think the good news is that people are starting to eat more seafood domestically and internationally. Consumers want to know where their seafood comes from. Wild and natural are great descriptors, and we have a great story to tell from Alaska. So Alaska sells, wild and natural sells. I think we have a good opportunity to see the value of our seafood continue to rise in the months and years ahead, particularly as the economies begin to recover. Mr. Chairman, I had a number of slides. If you don't mind, I'll skip through those and just jump to a couple toward the end that maybe will help answer a couple potential questions.
Sure, Ray. This is not going to be your only visit to our committee, so.
One quick one. These are the way our programs are broken down, and in your packets, there's a little more detail on each one of those programs. We just completed a Boston Food and Wine Show, the largest one in the country. This is just a quick example of how we work with other commodities to promote our products, cross-promote. This was a great show, one that I think will produce a lot of long-term benefits for Alaska.
Quickly on that one, of course, we're proud of our Alaska seafood. But what was the competition at Boston for us?
The competition was just about every other protein product on the market, in addition to our own seafood. We had seafood there; other seafood producers were there, but beef, pork, and chicken were there in a big way too. And that's really we're competing for center of the plate protein products, and we often talk about farm salmon, but we're really competing against beef, pork, and chicken as well, who are also very well funded. But that was one of our competitions there. International marketing, we market in these countries, Japan, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, China, and we're working now in Eastern Europe as well. And more recently, we've started to look into Brazil. Brazil is a large cod market, and they buy a lot of Alaska cod, salt Alaska cod, but it goes by way of Portugal and Spain. So we're going down to find out if there's a more direct route that we may take.
So on those, you know, it's interesting. You have this vision, and you look Alaska seafood, Alaska. They see that, they see a boat. Is there any one of those visions that are visuals that people really are drawn to, or is it across the board depending on what country you're from?
They're drawn to Alaska. If it comes from Alaska, they see it as a place that is a beautiful place. It's a clean place. It's everything that we produce up here is wild and natural. Those are why that's why we have the taglines that we have. We've added sustainable for the reasons we just discussed. But Alaska sells. People are really interested in Alaska. They understand this is a special place. We tag that with our seafood. It makes our seafood extra special, even more than it really is, and it's really great stuff. European Seafood Show, very quickly, these are the numbers. It's our crown jewel, if you will, for the international program, and we get some terrific response out of there. 48 million in sales in the 210 show, and over 500 million in follow-on sales for the year. I'll skip over these real quickly. I've mentioned those. This is the last thing I just wanted to talk about. We understand that when state investing in ASME, even if the state wasn't investing in ASME, it'd be the right thing to do, is that we need to market more than just seafood. We need to market Alaska. And so we work with ATIA, who you'll hear from in just a few moments, very closely. Ron Peck and I meet on a regular basis. Our staffs are in constant contact, looking for opportunities to share marketing experiences and activities. We work in their trade show or their ATIA road show. We carry their travel planners to trade shows where we go. We bring people to Alaska. We do a lot of things like that. We also try to help Alaska grow wherever we can. And that's been admittedly small in terms of our ability to do much with them, simply because of the availability of products to take out of the state. But we have required that any of our chefs that go to the National Seafood Cook-Off feature Alaska-grown products along with Alaska seafood. We've done some advertising in Alaska Airlines Magazine and places like that where we've had ASME and Alaska grown as dual marketing, and we've pretty well covered the cost of that. The other thing we do is we work with others in Alaska to promote products. We have had a long relationship with Alaska Brewing Company here in Juneau. You'll see if you go down to some of the restaurants, you'll see a big salmon with an Alaska amber on it. There's another example of a type of promotion that they've done using some of our photography. And they provide us beer to take to a lot of our shows. We've taken Alaska beer to Brussels, China, Spain, Japan, and even though they don't sell there now, it gives people a good idea that we do more in Alaska than just produce fish. And it's been a great partnership. And those are the type of things we continue to look for opportunities to do. Most recently, and just to wrap up, we did the Nobu show in London working with ATIA, where we hosted a bunch of food writers at a very exclusive restaurant to talk about Alaska and to show off some Alaska seafood. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll wrap up. I thank you very much, members of the committee, for allowing us to speak before you today.
Okay. Another question, Representative Gardner?
Yes, thank you very much, Ray. I always enjoy your presentations, and they leave me feeling excited about opportunities for Alaska seafood. You have one slide, ASME programs, domestic retail, food service, international technical, and not necessarily today, but could you give us maybe a brief synopsis of how you measure your success for each of these programs? Do you have numerical goals or some kind of qualitative benchmarks or something for each of these? I'd just sort of be curious to see.
To the chair, Representative Gardner, yes, we'd be pleased to provide you our measures. We do have measures in the state books. Our most important measure, quite frankly, is every time we sit down with our committees, are they satisfied that we're doing what we need to do to market their products? And the other measure is that our industry has the ability to actually vote out their assessment anytime they want. So as a former director used to say, we pass a market test every year. If they don't vote us, if they don't retain us or decide to vote us out, then we fail miserably. But we do have a set of measures that are in the state book, and I'll be happy to go through those with you.
Thank you. Bearing in mind it's not a popularity contest or something, you want to see what it really bring each element really brings to the state.
Will do.
Thank you,
Ray. I guess before we bring on Ron, is that what I'd like to do is have you help us. I'd like to showcase, for example, Representative Thompson or any of the members here, is to team us up with a value-added manufacturer or a vendor in our respective communities, and let's showcase them. Let's put out a little press release and saying, this is what my community, my constituent does for Alaska seafood marketing. So it'll be a little project we can work on with you, the committee can work on with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll be happy to work on that with you.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's just take a 30-second break here so the next Ron. And the next one will be Ron Peck and Patty Mackey with ATIA. And we have online listening in and available for questions is Deb Hickok. She is the chairperson of the board, and Kathy Dunn. And Kathy is in Anchorage, and Deb is in Fairbanks. Welcome to you all. Ron? Please introduce yourself for the record, as well as Patty and any other guests that you have in the room, and begin your presentation, please.
Thank you, Chairman Heron. My name is Ron Peck. I'm President and Chief Operating Officer for the Alaska Travel Industry Association. I'm proud to have been involved in the visitor industry for 33 years and have been in this position for 8 and a half. And with me today is a very active participant in our marketing program and who has served on our chair of ATIA for as long as I can remember, Patty Mackey, who is the executive director for the Ketchikan Visitors Bureau. And we have some selected industry friends with us who are also serve on our board and our marketing committee.
If you wish, you can introduce them, and they could at least raise their hand or stand.
Sure. That would be Lorene Palmer from the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau, who's on our marketing committee, and Tim McDonald, who's also on our board of directors with Temsco Helicopters.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. First of all, thanks to you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for the opportunity to talk to you about the programs that are currently in place to market Alaska as a world-class visitor destination, as well as our concerns for the future of our industry. Over the 15 years that I've been in the industry, and Mr. Peck's been around much longer, so he could give you even further background, I've seen cyclical changes that in our economic sector that have been caused by everything from national disasters, such as we experienced in the wake of 9/11, to regulatory issues, to most recently the recession. And unfortunately, Alaska's tourism industry has contracted rather than expanded in recent years. As the qualified trade association that administers the marketing program for tourism in Alaska, we believe very strongly in the need to put tourism on a path that fosters recovery of the industry and growth for the future benefit of Alaska businesses, communities, and the state. We feel that of the various factors we can control, a sustained marketing budget at a minimum of $20 million a year is vital to achieving a strong industry and ensuring that we don't become a missed opportunity. Just a real quick history of the tourism marketing program as it's existed since 1988 when the ATMC was established cooperatively between the state and private sector, private industry. This was the first time that a public-private partnership that created a research-driven marketing program was developed for marketing Alaska as a tourism destination. At that time, the employees who oversaw the program were actually State Department of Commerce employees, and the program was governed by a board of private sector and gubernatorial appointees. In 99, the Millennium Plan was approved, and that's our current arrangement that we have today, where staff members are employed by ATIA, which is a nonprofit trade association, governed by a board of directors. Funds are appropriated by the legislature annually, and oversight of ATIA's work as the state's QTA is provided through the Department of Commerce's Division of Economic Development. The plan also called, in addition to legislative appropriations, for the tourism industry to contribute funds to the program as well. Businesses pay their own way for things like ads in the state planner and on our website, and destination marketing organizations such as my local Visitors Bureau also contribute funds in addition to any of the advertising or promotional activities that we participate in. Also, the major cruise lines in Alaska were voluntary contributors to the program, and those contributions help generate the funds needed to match the state's annual appropriations.
Patty, what was the catalyst to creating ATIA? Was it what sequence of events or somebody raised a red flag? What was a catalyst that did it?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that one of the main reasons was to try and come up with a program that would put more money into the marketing and take less state dollars to do so. I think that was one definite shift from a state-run office through ATMC into the qualified trade organization.
So in the late 1990s, you know, the economy wasn't so great as far as revenue, and so it was just this pressure on the industry to take less GF, essentially.
I believe so, and I also think the industry was supportive, too, seeing that if a private entity like a nonprofit association was involved, it would drive more dollars to the actual marketing programs that we were trying to increase the funds for.
Please go ahead.
Thank you. In 2004 and then 2006, statewide industry assessments were first enacted. Up until this time, it was just local government that was collecting fees such as occupancy taxes on hotel stays. First, the vehicle rental tax was adopted, and that was followed by a variety of fees that have been assessed to the cruise industry with passage of ballot measure 2. As statewide taxation on the industry increased, voluntary contributions to match state tourism dollars has been affected. And what was originally a dollar-for-dollar match program was changed to a 30% match requirement in 2008 with a 3-year sunset provision to give the travel industry time to develop a program that could sustain and hopefully increase the dollars that are available to market Alaska. As noted earlier, the recession and other factors have led to the end of growth in Alaska's tourism economy. As a result of the higher cost of doing business in Alaska, the once robust cruise industry faltered in 2010 when over 100,000 fewer visitors came to our state. Governor Parnell met with industry representatives, and through legislative action, the Commercial Passenger Services Act was amended. At the same time, the legislature approved a one-time reinvestment of tourism-related revenues to counter the projected losses of visitors and to bolster our industry. Today, we anticipate that in FY 2012, the state will generate over $116 million in revenues from visitor-generated taxes and fees. A considerable amount of those revenues are already being utilized by the state for general fund appropriations. As we hope to demonstrate over the remainder of this presentation, we believe that those revenues can increase in the future with reinvestment in a more substantive marketing program for tourism. The increase in funding this past year has enabled some dramatic changes to Alaska's ability to promote the state to potential visitors. And at this time, I'd like to turn things over to Ron Peck to give an overview of how the additional marketing dollars have been utilized and some of the results that we've seen to date.
Thank you, Patty. And thank you to the committee for the opportunity to present and tell the Alaska tourism marketing story. For the past several years, the state marketing budget was $11.7 million and constituted our core budget, as Patty said. The additional $7 million in this fiscal year will help spread Alaska's message much farther, thanks to the administration and to you, the legislature, for this one-time injection of additional marketing dollars for FY 11. The bulk of the $7 million is being spent on marketing to consumers in the United States, but we also enhanced our efforts overseas and to reach to the travel trade, those who help us sell Alaska. The chart above reflects the planned expenditures for FY 11. $13 million will be directed towards consumer marketing. That includes television advertising, direct mail, magazine, online, or TravelAlaska.com website, and public relations. Another $3.5 million will be spent in the area of the travel trade, our international marketing efforts, in-state awareness, fulfillment, and collateral. And lastly, about $700,000 will be spent on research. We firmly believe in conducting marketing research so that our programs are efficient, effective in raising the awareness, the image, and inspiring visitors to come to Alaska. The additional funding in FY 11 has afforded Alaska the opportunity to significantly strengthen our television presence in a meaningful way. As you can see by this graph, our television budget has hovered around $1 million since FY 02. For FY 11, the $6 million budget has allowed for creation of 5 new television spots and increases our presence on cable television channels from 1 in FY 10 to 7 this year. Before we actually began developing the new creative commercials, we began conducting what we call concept testing. So we began our research before we even began creating the spots with our potential visitors. After the concept research testing, then we began constructing our new TV spots. I might also happily point out that the actual production and work done on the filming and developing of the commercials was accomplished completely with and by Alaskan companies. We already know that based on market research that these new spots and the stronger placement and frequency have had a positive impact in the marketplace, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But before I hope to be able to show you our newest ad. We tried to make it work earlier, and it did not. But if not, I just also want you to know that we've left you with three of the four new TV spots on the DVD for your reference in the office. So hopefully this works.
So while we're waiting, Ron, and I've seen these ads, and they're on partial. They're gorgeous. But did you ever consider a blooper?
A blooper?
the ones that were clever but didn't work?
We haven't, no. We actually did some bloopers years ago for a convention to show our members, but we've not actually thought about utilizing a blooper for actual commercials.
Well, maybe you could use some of the committee members here.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on.
Yeah, we got them here, of course. So.
We know that the awareness of Alaska has been increasing because of these new ads. We've been quite pleased by the results. In October of this year, prior to the new ads actually being placed and put out in the marketplace, we went to consumers and asked what travel ads they could recall in an unaided fashion and just asked them what ads they recalled from a television advertising standpoint. And in October, we were ranked number 10 amongst different destinations. We conducted that same research in January of this year, and our ranking has actually jumped four positions to number 6, ahead of some very strong destination brands such as California, Orlando, Jamaica, and the Bahamas. That's very good news for us. In addition, obviously ad awareness of Alaska is important, but so is the perception of Alaska. We want to deliver the message that Alaska is a great destination. And again, that's good news. 79% of the respondents stated that they had a very positive opinion, of Alaska's advertising. We are communicating a message that is on target. This graph represents a stated change in visitor behavior based on the new television campaign. We know that these new high-definition quality commercials are conveying the right message about Alaska. The spots are raising the awareness, the image, and ultimately inspiring future travelers to come and visit our great state. Also included in the consumer marketing effort is our vacation planner production. The official State of Alaska vacation planner will be delivered, printed, and distributed to 550,000 potential visitors. Consumer marketing also includes the operation and promotion of the TravelAlaska.com website. We will see 1.6 million unique visitors in FY11. And in addition to their visits, a substantial number of those visitors actually directly go to our Alaska travel business websites that are listed on our site. So we're a portal to actual business being conducted. Magazine advertising. This year we will place advertising in over 34 publications, again promoting Alaska as a destination. One of our very integral and strong components of our consumer marketing efforts is our direct mail campaign, and has been for a substantial period of time. This year, we will reach over 3 million households with an invitation from our governor urging them to get more information about Alaska and to visit our state. And I might add, Republican or Democrat, this campaign has worked very, very effective for us for a long time. Consumer shows. In this fiscal year, we will participate in 7 consumer shows that focus on consumers who may be interested in driving to Alaska or experiencing some of our outdoor adventure experiences. And lastly, our public relations campaign. One key large-scale project that was made possible through the additional funding was bringing Dave Price from CBS Early Morning Show to Alaska this winter. The show reaches 2.5 million viewers and generated substantial exposure for Alaska. We were able to show how beautiful the winter months are, including various activities, and even got a plug-in for Alaska's seafood. promoting tourism in Alaska, again, with public relations effort. We also use some of the funding to make a big splash in a national magazine that has a substantial readership of over 7 million. It's actually larger than Martha Stewart's magazine publication. It's called Cooking with Paula Deen, and we have a copy of the actual magazine for all of you. What you are seeing here is the opening two-page spread and the cover, but there's more. Alaska has 16 full pages in the January edition, and there will actually be a follow-up story from her trip this summer that will focus on food, a great exposure for the destination of Alaska. Alaska actually has sales representation or general sales agents who conduct sales, marketing, and travel training and work with the media in our major international destinations of the United Kingdom, Australia, and German-speaking Europe. Besides those major markets of UK, GSC, and Australia, we also work and have representation in Korea and Taiwan as secondary markets. Additionally, we also partner with tour operators internationally to leverage their existing relationships, resources, and product offerings. Finally, we also conduct familiarization tours for our international travel and tour operators and our domestic to familiarize, educate, and aid that travel trade in selling our destination. Lastly, and I could have used Ray's slide just as effectively, I also wanted to mention I've been employed here for 8.5 years. Early on in this job, I had the occasion to meet with Ray Ryuta as the executive director of ASME. And during this time frame, I will say that it's been a pleasure to work with Ray and the ASME staff and our staff on a regular basis. We have endeavored to identify areas whereby ATI and ASME can partner together, leverage our marketing efforts, resources, and programs to jointly bring more visitors to Alaska and to convey the importance, the value, and the outstanding taste of Alaska's wild, natural, sustainable seafood products. The four points mentioned on the PowerPoint are the most recent examples of this collaborative partnership that we've done this fall and winter. I actually have a document that we would like to share with you, but I want to share it with Ray also because there's some collaborative things that we want to make sure we're referencing, so we'll get that to you after the fact.
Okay. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a few questions on the study. We had an advertising effective study and effectiveness study, and it looks like there's a few slides that refer to that.
Yes.
What were the parameters of that study? How many subjects were there? Over what time period?
There were two separate time periods for the ad effectiveness. It was in October and January. I'll get you the exact number of how many people were identified. It was an online study, but I will be happy to I'll get that information for you right after the fact. I've got it.
Okay. And
go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then also, how was that company selected and what was the cost?
Through the chair, to Representative Tuck, that we conduct RFPs, requests for proposals, and we generally attempt to follow. We don't adhere exactly to state, but we have specific RFP proposals. I'm happy to share those with you. And this was an RFP proposal for those that specific advertising awareness and effective study.
Okay.
And the name of the firm was Jerry Henry and Associates.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Foster, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regard to your slide, a quick refresher going back to 2010, it says decrease in cruise deployment and economy leads the state to reinvest $7 million in marketing and reduce cruise ship taxes for this year, and then a slight decrease in independent visitation was measured. So that would have to do with the reduction in the cruise ship tax last year. Is that correct? Attack.
Through the chair to Representative Foster. I'm not sure that I understand the questions, Representative.
So last year the cruise ship taxes, the head tax was reduced, and with the intent that it would spur the cruise ship industry to increase ships coming up to Alaska. So here it says a slight increase in visitation was measured, and I just was curious if you had statistics or if you could get those to let us know specifically on the cruise ship side what the increase was. And
through the chair to Representative Foster, on the chart above, which Ms. Vanek will speak to, 2008 was our record year of 1.7 million visitors. 2009, we saw a loss of independent travelers. The cruise industry takes anywhere from 2 to 3 years to reposition ships. They made those announcements, which really impacted our 2010 season. So the reduction in 2009 of about 100,000 visitors was really on the backs of independent, highway, and air travelers. In 2010, well, and also in addition to that, in 2009, the cruise industry worked very hard to fill their ships, which they did, but as this study points out, the visitor expenditure reduced dramatically on average based on the study that the DCCED did. So we were impacted with fewer independent travelers and fewer average expenditures by collectively cruise, independent, and highway travelers. In 2010, this year, this summer, we saw an additional reduction of cruise visitors by 140,000 cruise visitors because they redeployed ships. So when I say that we saw that redeployment was a loss of 140,000, so we actually saw a slight increase, great news, good news, of independent travelers, highway and air, a slight number, so that the impact wasn't as dramatic.
Follow up?
Please, go ahead.
Thank you. And I think you, so you answered my question. That number includes cruise ship, air, and vehicles, and so forth. Yes.
Through the chair. Yes. Representative Foster, it does.
Okay.
And I'm happy to provide you with a breakout of that.
Right.
We can do that.
And then I had actually meant to start off my question with the, I realize that usually cutting of taxes in this situation is probably going to take a while, so it might be too early, but was just curious in terms of the actual statistical numbers, but I did support that decrease in the cruise ship taxes because I thought that was a good thing, and anything we can do. I'm from Western Alaska, and a number of my constituents said, you know, folks jump off those ships and they actually come up to rural Alaska.
Right.
So I thought that was a good thing. So thank you.
Representative Thompson?
May I follow up one?
Sure, go ahead.
Representative Foster. Through the chair to Representative Foster. The encouraging news for us, Representative, is that we know at least one cruise line has announced that they're returning with additional ship. That's Princess. So for 2011, we know that we're going to be up in another 40,000. We are up slightly this year with cruise visitors. We project to be about a 7,500 increase in total deployments for 2011. But in 2012, we will see at least one additional cruise ship large vessel of 40,000 passengers.
Representative Thompson, and then Gardner, and then Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Out of curiosity, on the cruise ship travelers, is the percentage of tourists that have extended their tours on to a land tour following the cruise, is that the percentage dropped with the economy being down?
Through the chair to Representative Thompson, twofold. Yes, they were in some cases not buying those land tours as extensively as they had in the past. And secondarily to that, the real impact for us in South Central and the Rail Belt Corridor, out of those roughly 1 million visitors, as we know, in the Rail Belt, 2 years ago, or in the peak years, 400,000 visitors did that Gulf crossing, which affords them to do the land tour. That number, of that 140,000 loss that we talked about, 120 of them came out of the Gulf. So that really dramatically impacted the Rail Belt Corridor, Denali, Fairbanks, and Anchorage to a large degree. Did I answer your questions?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Representative Gardner, then Representative Tuck.
Thank you very much, and I'm not sure how best to phrase this. I have constituents who are involved in the tourism industry and dealing mostly with independents. I don't have any cruise ship owners, anything that I'm aware of, in my district, but they are people who own cabins in Seward and things like that. And they focus on the independent traveler because I think they see that's where their business comes from. And I'm trying to understand the numbers that we have here.
You say 77,000 additional visitors estimated for 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And if my math is right, that's about a 20% increase?
I believe from 2010, we're estimating conservatively, based on early research that we've conducted, that we will see an increase of about, oh, I think that's more like about 5%.
Oh, okay.
Of the 1.5 million to go from 10 to 11.
Okay. And, sorry.
Excuse me, through the chair to represent Gardner. I apologize for interrupting you, but we believe that will essentially be an independent travelers and highway.
Thank you, through the chair. That's the crux of my question. You know, how do we, when we do advertising efforts, how do we target one way or the other, and how do we focus specifically on the independent travelers? Do we have any way of knowing, for example, with your TV ad campaign and the increase in the number of people who talk about visiting Alaska, do we know what percentage of them are impacted to travel independently or with a cruise ship, or we have a mix, right, where people get off the cruise ship and then strike out on their own?
Through the chair to Representative Gardner, we do everything we can with our commercials, and I'm sorry that we're not able to see them, but to spread the word about all the variety types of activities and experiences that you can have in Alaska. The reason that we're very confident that we believe that we see a much higher increase in interest in Alaska this year, or a increase, I should say, not much higher. For lack of a better word, the cruise industry is flat, so the growth will have to be in independent and highway travel.
Thank you. And if I might just briefly, do we have an estimate of how the spending varies? I mean, what's the spending within Alaska for cruise ship passengers compared to independents? Per person. Do we know what that is?
Through the chair, to Representative Gardner. We conducted a study in 2005-06, which called the Alaska Visitor Survey Program. That study stated that at that point, the average visitor expenditure was about $935 collectively. Mm-hmm. There is specific information that relates the independent travel is slightly above that, cruise travel is slightly below. And I'd be happy to provide that with you. But with one caveat, that study is being done and conducted again this year. We are very, very appreciative that DCCED is doing that because we believe that those numbers are not accurate. They're old.
Thank you.
And so based on the old study, the average cruise expenditure was somewhere around $150 to $200 less than independent.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I might just explore that a little bit more. If I'm coming to Alaska on a cruise ship and I'm paying essentially for my room and board, probably before I even set foot on a ship or an airplane, that money doesn't directly come into Alaska. It goes into some corporation that's outside, whereas if I get on a plane, once I hit the ground here, all my room and board is paid to Alaskan owners or owner affiliates. Is that...
The studies that I'm referring to specifically speaks to what you spend in the state of Alaska. It specifically calls out, exclusive of transportation and travel, when you came to Alaska, how much did you spend? So we're comparing apples to apples with the independent traveler and the cruise visitor. And you are correct, that number is slightly less. I think it's $150 to $200 less as of the previous study. So the overall average expenditure is somewhere in the vicinity of $935 as of that original study in 2005, I believe.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, that doesn't quite make sense to me.
Okay. Well, we can explore it some more.
I'm happy to provide the information.
Thank you.
We have approximately 8 minutes left in our scheduled time slot. We may be able to go over because in a couple of slides ahead, that's the largest primate in the room that we got to talk about. And so we may go over a little bit. So Representative Tuck and then Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just kind of real quick, tagging on what Representative Berta was saying, Roberta Gardner was, so exclusive of transportation and travel, cruise isn't considered Alaska money that people are spending on their Alaska travel, just that's part of transportation and part of travel.
If I, through the chair to Representative Tuck, if I understand your question correctly, the surveys that we do, the research that we do, specifically calls out exclusive of you traveling on a cruise or taking an airplane to get here. How much money did you spend when you were here?
Okay.
So for the cruise visitor, that would be how much money I spent on a short excursion with an Alaska-owned company such as Temsco Helicopters or Alaska Wildland Adventures when they were on Alaska, or if they extended their stay on their own and flew to Western Alaska. How much money did you spend at a hotel in Nome or in Kotzebue? So we hone in on how much money they're spending in Alaska.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Yeah, you mentioned that Princess was returning with another ship. Can you let us know what cruise lines had reduced their ships and by how many?
Through the chair to Representative Tuck. I can do that. I would prefer to give you the specifics. I don't know them off the top of my head, other than I believe Princess, Holland America, RCT, have all, and NCL have all reduced capacity.
Ron, please send that information to my office, and we'll distribute to everybody, every committee member. A follow-up?
Yes, follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then also, going on the independence, how is it determined that people are coming up here for, you know, whether it's the road system or the airline, how is it determined that they're coming up here for business versus visiting family versus the tourism? How is that determined?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck. DCCED annually conducts studies which identify and through intercept surveys ask those questions, why they're traveling. And we're happy to provide that information to you.
Okay.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Ron. Many of the visitors, independents that come to Alaska first came on a cruise ship. Do you have any idea roughly what that percentage might be in a given year?
Through the chair, to Representative Munoz, yes, we do. A number of years ago, we did a survey. We conducted a survey and asked specifically what we call visitors who were repeating, who were not on a cruise, but had come back from a previous visit. And 27%, or 1 in 4, said their previous visit was a cruise.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you. The amount of dollars spent by the Alaska travel industry advertising Alaska, how does that compare with other states, and what kind of a bang for a buck do we get comparison-wise to return of travelers?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, my best comparison, we can find comparisons about destinations that spend more, destinations that spend less, but what I traditionally like to say is that the two states that are what I identify as long-haul destinations, destinations that need to reach their customer because they're going to plan their trip longer, spend a lot longer time, we cannot focus on what we call regional or short-haul traffic. If I'm the state of Washington, I'm promoting my travel for a weekend visit from Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. We literally can't do that. I jokingly say, even if all 25,000 people from the Yukon came, it wouldn't really make a big difference. So it's Hawaii and Alaska. Hawaii will annually see somewhere in the vicinity of 7 million visitors. Their annual marketing budget is north of $80 million. So we believe that roughly 2 million visitors on an annualized basis, including the summer visitors and the winter visitors, about 250,000 come from travel to Alaska from October to April. That's why we've been saying for years $20 million is the right number for us.
Okay, and of course that's, if you could move to the next slide and briefly explain that, and then we'll get to the slide I've been waiting for.
Patty Mackey, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman. Going back to the slide that Representative Gardner referenced a little earlier during questions, it's still very early in our marketing program for 2011. We will actually continue to be putting advertising out into the marketplace through April because we know that we have just people making decisions about their travels to Alaska in 2011 all the way up until the spring and even later than that. But we try and capture that September through April time frame is when the bulk of people will be making decisions and booking their travel. But at this point, we believe that the $7 million that was provided in increased marketing funds is going to, as of now, result in at least 77,000 additional visitors for this year. You also note $72 million in spending is estimated as an increase and will result in the creation, or perhaps it's better to say the reinstatement of jobs within our industry. This amounts to about a 5% increase for the sector of travelers to Alaska, which is, again, predominantly independent, and is encouraging when you consider that currently the U.S. Travel Association is predicting growth across the United States at about 2.6% this year. This, to me, sums up the reason for the $20 million ask, is that in 1 year, with the additional funds that we were able to put to use in the marketplace, we can show substantial awareness increases and substantial growth. And if we are able to sustain at that level, then we're just going to reap the benefits throughout coming years. We have a budget at the level that we believe will get us where we want to be. Quickly, well, I need to go back because we did talk a little bit about this slide while it was up, but just as a point of reference, just Ron kind of cited to you the drop in visitation since 2008, which was our peak, also employment and direct spending. When we're looking at a direct and indirect amount of something in the neighborhood of $3.4 billion year-round for visitation to Alaska, you know, those are some substantial, serious dollars coming into our businesses and keeping people employed. As noted earlier, the current match program that we have in place sunsets at the end of this fiscal year. If the industry is required to abide by the original match requirements, which were lined out in the Millennium Plan in 1999, which is essentially a dollar-for-dollar match, the gains that we hope to have made this year are going to be lost. As noted before, the assessments that have since been legislated or written into law in the state on industry, such as the vehicle rental tax and the cruise ship fees that are being paid now, weren't in place at the time that we agreed that we would contribute at that level to match the state dollars. And so we're hopeful that the legislature this year will take into consideration the amount of state-generated revenues that are now coming in that can be tracked to the industry, and will work with us to develop a way to sustain our funding that's going to not only benefit the state in terms of revenues being returned to you, but it's also going to it's going to raise that amount in the future, and it's also going to help our businesses who have been faltering these last several years get a leg back up and get back to levels of growth that we feel are healthy for the state of Alaska and for our industry. And I thank you.
Patty, I guess I'll preface this, and then I'll make a comment, is that the committee members that are on this committee didn't have to get on this committee. They wanted to be on this committee. And so they have an interest in marketing Alaska, obviously. So, like I said earlier, this slide is the largest primate in the room. So I guess a direct question, what's your plan to maintain the match that you currently enjoy?
Mr. Chairman, are you referring to the 30% match? To answer your question, I believe very strongly that, and I would hope that the committee will listen to us and maybe think about this too, that it's time to really just think through the Millennium Plan today based on the changes that we've seen that are affecting our industry and the way that the revenues are now being diverted that we were using for that match into actual state taxes and fees. So my first, if I could have a wish list, I guess my first request would be that we strongly consider a different way of determining what the revenues or what the marketing program dollars are going to be each year, and look at adjusting either the existing legislation or look at new legislation to make that change. And then you solve the match problem. If that's something that's unattainable this session, then certainly we would request strong consideration and we hope support for at least continuing the match another, you know, at the 30% level, while still seeking additional funding so that we can continue to raise the bar on tourism economic benefit here.
Well, I appreciate that, and several of us have had conversations about this because, again, we're all interested in having a healthy industry because it helps our communities. So I guess here's what I would suggest is we're essentially the Committee of First Referral, and if there was any kind of legislation that was to be considered in both houses, this would be a good place to start. So I believe I'm saying this with in agreement with the rest of my committee members. Let's start here. Let's market what you're trying to do here. Let's build this legislation. Let's get it, because you got nine members that want to do something, whereas maybe elsewhere in the building there will be critics and people that are not so enthused. And so let's build this legislation here, and then wherever it goes after this, let the chips fall where they may. But that's the challenge from this committee to your business, to your industry. Let's build that marketing. Let's market it, and let's build a piece of legislation here to have to see success in your what you're trying to go after. I mean, you have people in private sector, you have lobbyists, you have, you know, there's a lot of people we can do this. So that's the challenge to the industry from this committee.
Mr. Chairman, we accept your challenge gratefully, and we would be honored to work with this committee to see if we can't make something happen this year. I thank you very much for that.
Right, and again, in closing here, I'll ask members for short comments, but in closing, you have a friendly committee here. So let's build it here. Any comments before we gavel out? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the nice things about the tax incentives that we have for the film industry is hopefully to get more exposure for Alaska. And it was nice to hear the comments earlier by Ray Ryuta talking about how the Alaska seafood marketing, basically how Alaska sells. I mean, that's really fortunate. And I think that by having those tax credits for the film industry also helps people in the hospitality industry tremendously and expands. You know, I can just talk about some of the movies that recently happened, you know, the motorhome rentals and the hotels and motels. We had 12,000 more bed nights from one movie alone, another 2,500 bed nights, and these are in the off seasons. It was kind of remarkable that when they walked in and talked about how they needed to rent some motorhomes, but they're looking at from October, November, December, how most of those motorhome rental places are actually closed. And you're talking about the restaurants, businesses, and everything else that's taking place. So one of the nice things, and that's one of the things I think this committee needs to look at, is ways that we can continue to expose ourselves, continue to keep our tourism industry and our hospitality industry year-round. And as we look at, you know, what we're looking to see investment-wise in marketing, how other avenues that we can in creating that exposure as well.
Okay. Before I gavel out, great job to ASME and to ATIA. Great job. I mean, this is you can't buy that kind of advertising, so you both did a great job. We're up Thursday. We do have the governor's bill, an ADA bill, and so we're going to it'll only be a 45-minute meeting on Thursday, but we'll consider the governor's bill, House Bill 119. It is 11:51. We're out of here.